Welcome to the Healing Ground Movement, a podcast dedicated to revolutionizing how we think about our bodies and our health. I'm your host, Dr. Carly Hudson, DC, and I have lived my life in pursuit of holistic healing and care that goes beyond symptom management. If you've been listening and like what you're hearing, head over to your favorite platform and leave us a review so we can reach more people with our important message. Enjoy today's episode.
Hey everyone, today's episode is brought to you by Rad Roller. Now, Rad Roller doesn't just bring you the most phenomenal self-myofascial release tools, but also some of the best education you can get on how to use them. Visit their website, radroller.com, for special instruction, videos, and access to their incredible app to teach you how to get the most out of your favorite Rad Roller products. Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Healing Ground Movement podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Carly Hudson, and with us today, we have Chanda Hinton, and her story is just a phenomenal experience and gift to her community, and I cannot wait to dive into it. But first, let's get to know Chanda a little bit better. When you look into the face of Chanda, you see vitality and radiant health. You see a young woman with passion and determination. You see a person of strength and purpose. If you glance down from her face, you will see her wheelchair. And you realize that the goals of the nonprofit organization she founded and directs are rooted in her own personal story. Chanda is the executive director of the Chanda Plan Foundation, which provides integrative healthcare programs to individuals with physical disabilities. Her previous honors include the Unsung Hero Award from Mayor Hickenlooper to honor Denver's 150th anniversary, the Health and Wellness Award from the Commission of People with Disabilities, and the Pam Dale Award from Miss Wheelchair Colorado. She has served as a board committee member with the Denver Commission for People with Disabilities, the Colorado Fund for People with Disabilities, and the Denver Foundation Health Committee and the Colorado Cross Disability Coalition. You are a busy lady. That is incredible. Thank you for making time to chat with us today.
Yay! Yes. I'm not doing all that now. There's stuff that's active and inactive, obviously. But I love being a part of community for sure. So that's a long list. Yes.
It's a long list. I am impressed. And I think kind of the place to start, I would hope, is, you founded the Chanda Plan and you spearheaded a movement to pass a Colorado House bill changing the kind of care that is covered under Medicaid for people with spinal cord injuries. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey that got you to seeing a place for the Chanda Plan in the world?
Absolutely. So in my bio, it really talks about that what I do has been sparked by my own personal story. And so truly everything that I'm doing today has everything to do with that. And so when I was injured when I was 9, accidentally shot in the back of the neck, I have a spinal cord injury at the level C5, C6. And so I am a quad and I function with the power wheelchair and a beautiful, sweet, adorable service dog. But with all of that, the reason, when I was injured from 9 all the way up until 21, I was really embedded into the medical model of like, here's your spinal cord injury, here's all of the secondary conditions that really come with that. And so whether it's bladder issues, bowel issues, spasticity, you name it, it's like, here's all these issues. And then here's the list of medication to address these issues. And so for me, living a life of just sitting in my chair, not moving my body, because that's not what insurance covers, and consuming tons of medication to address the issues, obviously then creates more issues. I came to a point when I was 21, I started having really severe chronic pain. And so, of course, I go to my physician, still under kind of that same model of care around being very traditional, saying, oh, we have chronic pain. That's another list that goes to your secondary condition. Mm-hmm. And guess what? There's another medication that we want to give to address that, which was, having narcotics. And mm-hmm. at that point, I became dependent on narcotics for the pain rather than addressing the pain and addressing all these things, which I know we'll get into more. But basically, because I was so dependent on the narcotics, I got extremely sick. Because if you look at that, there's no vitality in just sitting and consuming medications, having other issues from the medications, which cause more. And so for me, it just, the vitality of my life just became extremely diminished. I got down to 59 pounds. I needed to be hospitalized. I was being fed intravenously. So it's kind of interesting to see that the medical model put me into a hospital needing medical intervention. Mm-hmm. And then from there, the conversation around what I do today for myself and for others was really critical, because I could have then took the opportunity of bouncing back and forth from, you know, living with this not very, I would call it not very effective way to process and live with my life, mm-hmm. with the medication, to needing medical intervention to save my life and going back to this back. So like that wasn't going to be ideal for me, right?
Right. Well, because when we were talking before, didn't you say that that was cut? You asked at that time, you were advocating of like, okay, so all of these medications, which were essentially in themselves symptom managers, managing the symptoms. Yes. And also all of these things got me here into emergency care. What are my options going forward? And they said, correct. Well, we'll refill your prescriptions.
Yeah. I mean, in that point where I saved my life with the medical intervention, rather than going back into that back and forth, it was asking what you just said, the question. And it came from my sister, actually, who had practiced yoga for many years, about what can we do to redefine the way that we approach Chanda spinal cord injury? And so why aren't we looking at acupuncture, massage, chiropractic, you know, physical therapy, like this way of moving her body, giving her body what it would normally do when it was functioning prior, mm-hmm. but yet her body can't do that. So what other ways can we give that to her body through the hands of other people, mm-hmm. and giving her body what it deserves? And so at that point, it was really interesting because the physician wasn't opposed to it. And I want to say that sometimes physicians aren't opposed to it. It's one, they either are not educated about it, or if they are, the biggest thing is for them to recommend it, then who covers it? And I think that that's very difficult for physicians to say, oh yeah, go do this, but pay out of pocket. And some individuals could be like, well, wow, like I could spend tons of money doing that, but yet I could save a lot of money had mm-hmm. the insurance company or the system overall would to see the value. So that's where my mind went, because when I started doing integrative therapies, it dramatically changed my life. So I'm on the podcast today because of integrative healthcare. And so with that, I really wanted to do some research to identify where are the barriers that are causing me and other people with spinal cord injuries and other people in the world from getting these services. And this is where the system is really the primary problem in the barrier. And so my issue is that I, you know, with me getting better, I really wanted to advocate for Medicaid to fund these services. And so that's exactly the question that you started with, which long answer to get to there, but I think it's valuable to hear the whole story.
I think we need to hear the whole story, because as you're talking about, I love that you use the word vitality, because, you know, all of this traditional model was keeping you alive. It was keeping you from suffering from a lot of these secondary conditions that come with spinal cord injury. And whether or not people listening understand spinal cord injury, if it's been present somewhere in your life, I think it's worth kind of mentioning as an aside, is that wherever the spinal cord injury is in your body will affect any nerve that comes out below that. So as Chanda's talking about at the very base of her neck, that's all the major organ systems and all of the muscular systems of both of her limbs. So it's kind of everything that got a bit tweaked one way or another. So everything needed a little bit of help. And so depending on how high or how low that is, there's different levels of intervention.
Correct.
But in this way, all of these medications, they were keeping you from suffering and succumbing to these injuries, but that word vitality, it's such a different measurement of health. And how many people with or without spinal cord injury, with any other kind of symptom that they're managing, is choosing a symptom suppression in place of possible vitality, because that's what the system can give us. That's what our insurance can give us.
Correct. And I think that by suppressing the symptoms, using those, that mm-hmm. you can't ever reach or even be aware of what vitality is, because without removing some of that, you become used to what it is. You think that that becomes the norm, right? So me being on those medications and the vitality I experienced from being on those became like, oh, this is just the way that I am. And so once that shifted, the vitality level in which it was able to increase around just my cognitive awareness was vast. It was just like, wow, like I've never felt so energized. I've never felt so motivated. I've never felt so all of these things, right? Which as humans, we all want vitality as a human in the world. Like that's where we get to be the best humans, right? Yeah. And sometimes for various reasons, environmental, whatever, you know, mine happened to be a spinal cord injury, getting thrown into the medical model, getting these medications for the symptoms. And I never want to be an individual that says, like, you know, if you're one of these individuals that's stuck inside that thing, it's not your fault. And it doesn't mean that you have to like tomorrow throw out everything that you're taking. There's a process to all of it. There's a process and there's a place of meeting in the middle to like meet somebody where they're at and make sure that you're honoring what it is that they're doing. And how can you do interdisciplinary care and service to an individual to make the vitality reality? And so,
love it. I'm so glad that you brought that up, that it is, because when we talk integrative medicine, I think it's really tempting to cast a net that only covers the alternative medicine. And alternative medicines are kind of generally now anything that isn't pharmaceutical or surgical is alternative medicine. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the model we're in right now. But integrative really is integrative. And that's not to say that you're not going to need some sort of pharmaceutical intervention or you won't need a surgery, but that has to be part of your system. And I'm really glad that you said, and nothing that we ever talk about on this podcast should be constituted as a doctor's advice, but certainly definitely here, we're not saying go cold turkey and find something new. It is a process. And so tell us a little bit about your process and what these alternative therapies were able to give you. I mean, what were you able to exchange, you know, pharmacy for acupuncture, chiropractic, all of these things?
Yeah. I mean, in addition to my process, I would also say that the integrative model is that there's such a variance difference of like what integration also means to people. So that it's like, I would hope that someday we can get rid of alternative and we can just say, hey, we live in a world of integrative healthcare. And that looks like this and this. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's an exciting place to maybe think. My process was after I, you know, started doing those services, I really identified, because some people would even say, so tell me which service is most impactful to you. And I would say there is not one that has caused me to be where I am today. Each of the modalities do something very, very different to me and my body. And I even expressed to you before we got on the podcast that my body's very receptive. And so for me to identify and pinpoint what modality was doing what was really beautiful as well. Because then I could express to other people that, hey, this might not be your journey. This was my journey, but this could be some things that you could experience. And so with massage, it was like having the pain reduced through blood circulation, lymphatic drainage, all the things that my body, everybody needs is really critical. With the acupuncture, right? The acupuncture, it was very organ-based, right? It was very beautiful to have function and seeing that, you know, my bowels and my bladder and my immune and all those kinds of things could really be addressed by using acupuncture. And then chiropractic was very, you know, far more alignment with giving space between my joints. And so all those things, granted, it's like, we know that they do those things, but for me, how my body reacted was very beautiful and different. And so with physical therapy, again, that's just moving the body. Cause it's like when you're in massage and acupuncture, chiropractic, you move your body. It's there's different ways in which movement is. And I always talk about how movement is life, because blood circulation is movement, meridian of acupuncture points and the movement of energy and all that is movement. And then for me, the physical therapy was a whole nother level of movement that my body needed. So as I started to do these services, obviously my pain goes down. So narcotics go out, right? And so I'm no longer on narcotics. And I love that, because that's a way that my vitality was given to me. I would reduce my baclofen, reduced my ditropan. So I still use some of those baclofen and ditropan. There was some medication that was put on during that very kind of stressful time that has been difficult to get off because of how difficult like antidepressants can be for like, you know, the headaches and the storms that happen in the head that happen with all this medication. So being aware of that and knowing like what my body can take and not take has been also another journey that I'm still on. But I knew right away there was a process of these services, the benefits, and then knowing that I'm still in that process and that the process is not linear at all. It's definitely up and down and all over the place. And I have to, and I hope that other people can give themselves patience and grace in the process.
I love that. And it's so true. And I think, again, we're talking about a different model and a different system, a way of thinking about health. And I absolutely agree with you. I do hope someday we can just say this is integrative health. Nothing's alternative. There aren't regular doctors and the weird doctors. We're here to take care of your health. And
together,
because isn't that the point? And when we talk about sort of the traditional model, it's, you know, it's a very pathogenic approach. It's what's the problem and how do we take that problem out? And we do it organ system by organ system by organ system. Mm-hmm. And when we look at integrative health and the model that you are moving your way towards and have been on this journey towards and will forever be on a journey, because when we talk about health from the point of salutogenesis, from the, you know, saluto being health and genesis being, you know, origins of, that it is an ongoing practice of discovery. And where is my health today? Where is my vitality today? And what support does it need? And where will I get it? And in that model, a symptom doesn't come from one specific failing of an organ. It's part of how the whole body communicates.
Holistic.
That's all the whole, that's the holistic right there. And so when you talk about acupuncture, for example, for your injuries, and where that system breakdown is, it's organ support for you. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. For my system breakdown, it's nervous system support. The acupuncture mm-hmm. impacts my central nervous system and helps with things like asthma, which for me is a spastic cough coming from my central nervous system misfiring because mm-hmm. my injury was a TBI. Mine happened in the brain. And yep. for someone else, a lot of my patients get relief from acupuncture for musculoskeletal, for back pain and aches. Mm-hmm. And it's the same treatment applied differently to different origins of symptoms and problems. And yet we can all find the care and the support that we need. It's that journey. It's yes, that individualized journey.
Yeah. To not say this is what it will do, but this is, here's all the possibilities based on whatever it is that's going on with you. Because also somebody could have spinal cord injury and TBI. And so think of what their experience is going mm-hmm. to be using acupuncture. It's going to vary. And so yeah. I think people being open is just like one of the things that's most critical. And knowing that one time is mm-hmm. not going, like if somebody does a treatment one time, they may feel it, but they're not, they may not. And so like the first treatment I had, it was like, I felt it right away. Again, my body was receptive, but because I felt it right away, I knew that it was a treatment that I wanted to do the rest of my life. Now, some people say, hey, when you do integrative healthcare, they want to keep you on it. And it's like, well, for me, my body, it doesn't walk anymore. And so therefore, if I could go to the gym and work out on my own, if I could take a walk every day, if I could do the things for myself that I could do, then I wouldn't have to rely. But unfortunately, the reality is that I can't do those things on my own. And so therefore, I'm okay knowing that I will do these modalities, these services for the remainder of my life, because it's what gives my body what it needs and the vitality that it needs. And for me, I feel like that's far more cost effective as well as more less invasive to my body than taking more medications and not addressing potentially the core issue mm-hmm. and having more symptoms on top of symptoms and just not, you know, I think that's more costly, not only financially based on those services, but also costly to my vitality, costly to my social life, costly to my life, you know? And so I really want to look at it in those ways. And again, not bashing the traditional model, but just talking about the level at which we utilize it, not over utilizing it, but know that it's there for a really beautiful reason.
Mm-hmm. And that reason has grown a bit beyond its boundaries. But because again, you're talking about that measurement of vitality and how you can't put a price on that. you know, the ability to go out and have a drink with your friends and to be able to go and leave the house and be present and alert and have the lights on versus, you know, some of these more overwhelmed, less vital engagements. So when we talk about vitality, you know, that's just a measurement that you can't put a price on. And that really comes down to, you know, what makes life worth living. But something that I really love that you said a bit ago was about you changed the what is sometimes cast in sort of predatory language about how alternative medicine tries to trap you into going forever. And the way you talked about it was really like, this is the tool I choose to use. Mm-hmm. And I see that a lot with my patients as well, is that, you know, we live in an imperfect world. We live in a world with a lot of stressors. We live in a world that has a lot of conveniences. So we don't move as much as we would like to or eat as well as we would like to. The quality of food is reducing. And so these alternative medicines, these alternative practices start to become the thing to help fill in those blocks and that we choose to do because, again, it gives that measurement of vitality. And I just really wanted to appreciate you for drawing that connection, that it becomes a choice of how do you want to feel? How do you want to support yourself in an imperfect world?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that we don't ask ourselves that same question when we're taking the same medication over and over because it's being covered. But yet, why are we technically, if it wasn't covered, then we probably would be asking the same question. It's like, oh, they're trying to trap me in to this particular medication to take over and over because of the cost. And it's like, no, it's not the provider. It's not the tool. It's where the system again lives around the coverage of it, which I think then makes us think that that's what's occurring when in reality, it's not occurring. It's another tool that we have to be aware of that you just said. And so, you know, I think again, when it comes back to, and I don't know where you want to go next with it, but I think when it comes back to systems, that was where after my experience, you know, I had two kind of things that I wanted to do right away, which was one, make us available to people. And what was that going to look like? One was talking about it within the systems of Medicaid. And then number two was looking at, well, how do I help people get coverage for these services until the system is able to catch on? And so, you know, those were the two things that you at the beginning of the podcast that you brought up around legislation. And so that was legislation was the first thing that I did where I really observed the legislative process and then was able to get a pro bono lobbyist to represent myself with this idea and sponsors to present a bill that said, hey, Medicaid, let us prove to you that by funding acupuncture, massage, and chiropractic for folks with spinal cord injuries on Medicaid, you're going to see an improved quality of life, that vitality that people deserve to live with, as well as a cost effectiveness to Medicaid. And we have an independent evaluator that is going to, or is looking at those costs to show the cost effectiveness and the improved quality of life. So in 2009, we passed that bill, and then we've sustained that bill from 2009 until today. And then we have that bill at the Capitol again, or a new bill, but around the same waiver to expand it geographically so that it'll be Colorado statewide, as well as demographically, which is adding other diagnoses to it. And so we've already went through the Senate committee. We just passed appropriations this morning. And so we're doing really good. And now it's on to the House side of things. And so for us, we're really excited to have that piece of systemic change because that ultimately is where it needs to be housed and supported for folks with disabilities. And beyond that, I'm just starting with disabilities because it's like, hey, wait a second, we're spending way too much money on folks with disabilities on Medicaid. And so therefore, during this time, why did we have now what's called the Chanda Plan Foundation and the Chanda Center for Health? While this is sitting over here with systemic change, trying to catch on and change services to everybody to make up for those that weren't eligible for this, we had to then, you know, we raise money through our foundation to ensure that people do have access to it because it goes back to that whole thing. Well, we want them to do it, but if the system's not going to fund it, we have to give them access to the tool.
Yes. And I love the two-pronged approach there. And so often, you know, and I definitely hear it in my circles, it's so frustrating that we want to give access. We want these alternative medicines to be available to everybody, but they're not covered by insurance. Insurance is created and indoctrinated in disease management, not healthcare. It's not a lot of money in helping people get healthier. But at the same time, it's also how our healthcare is structured such that this is how we can pay for it. And a lot of these therapies are really expensive. And when we talk about, particularly in the reign of spinal cord injury, there are so many different things that need management and care. Well, that can just be astronomical and not even not an option for so many people.
Yeah, and I would, go ahead, sorry.
I was like, and you've done this beautiful, you've created this beautiful container where you look at all of these questions of accessibility and payment and coordination, all of these rate limiting steps before we even get to finding a provider, which is just phenomenal.
Yeah. And I would say that when you mentioned too, it's like the ongoing cost of these services could be a lot when it's out of pocket. Yes. Mm-hmm. But it's far less for the system to fund than what they're funding now, which is the traditional model. So I wanted to like kind of create some clarification around that, right? Because I want people to understand that, yeah, when we're paying out of our pockets, like, of course it seems like a lot, but it's like, if you were to be paying out of your pockets for the procedures and the surgeries and the ongoing medications, that if they're a lot and not in collaboration with your, within the model of integration, mm-hmm. that's the part that I always want to make sure, which I know that you get that. And I'm just kind of sharing it with viewers or people that are listening, is that that's the part where we have to remember to educate and clarify, because I think that that's where people start to get scared about, well, I don't have the money to do it. And it's like, well, of course you don't, but it should be covered for you.
I love it. Thank you for calling me on that and for pointing that, because it is true. And I think about it in other scenarios where it's so funny when I do handle, say, a car accident claim, just for example, which is so separate. But when I have patients that need to go in for surgeries and MRIs, or they have a broken limb or a lot of things coming out of it, you know, those costs, which are easily covered, but they're easily covered totaling thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. Versus, and they have very little upfront pay to pay for it because it's part of how that system of coverage works. Versus then for the whiplash that I treat, for example, you know, it's probably about $500 for the whole care, but that $500 comes out of pocket. So it feels heavier. Yep. Even when you look at the strict cost of care itself, that pile is so much smaller.
Yeah, especially when we have different economic levels at which we live as humans too, where it's like, oh, well, if I can get covered that, which has cost a lot more, but I can't afford 500, like they may choose, without the lack of education, to put their bodies through something that it really doesn't need, because financially they can't pay for the mm-hmm. part that's more effective and more, more effective physically and more cost effective.
Yeah. Well, so with that beautiful understanding of systems and a desire to shift and coordinate access, what are some of the things? So the Chanda Plan Foundation, and it's, there's actually a physical location here in Denver where individuals with spinal cord injuries can go and receive care. But before we even get to these phenomenal providers that you have, you know, in your foundation, what are all of the things that you do to make that care accessible and coordinated?
Yeah, we have the Chanda Plan Foundation, which is really the entity that is raising the money. And then we have the Chanda Center for Health that's truly delivering the services. So while we have the waiver, which is the spinal cord injury waiver, that is the bill that we just discussed, the legislative process and being expanded, that's one way that we've allowed people to get access. But then through our philanthropic dollars, how we've done it is that at the Chanda Center, people can apply to our organization to come here at a sliding scale fee for those that were not eligible for the spinal cord injury waiver. And so with that, people will just inform us that, hey, and we have to, unfortunately, have very specific diagnoses underneath the foundation that we fund and we don't fund, because just with limited dollars, we have to identify that, right? And so we really have picked individuals where, not individuals, but a population where that lack of movement with paralysis and, you know, diagnosis associated to paralysis is usually, that's our population that we really focus on. And so with that, when people apply, they can come into our organization, the Chanda Center, to then get these services at sliding scale. That can be $5 a treatment, $10 a treatment, $15 a treatment. What we do is we identify based on their income what the sliding scale fee will be for them. And then we have some people that come in for private pay because they can. We have people that are on the waivers because we're a provider under Medicaid to then effectively provide these services. So when we created the legislation, we had no idea that we would ever become a provider of what we created. But when we did that, we were having a lack of providers that would enroll in it. And that's because it's difficult to become a Medicaid provider. That's mm-hmm. a whole nother story, right? But for us, we felt that it was really critical because we could create quality control over the services that we provide, meaning that when folks come into our center, the Chanda Center, they don't feel as though they're coming into a center where they have to feel awkward about their disability. I mean, just coming into the physical location, meaning like getting in is easy, going to the bathrooms is easy, coming up to the counter and filling out paperwork, there's all of that. But then when they go into a treatment room, their providers are so open and so comfortable with disability that they also don't feel awkward about, hey, how am I going to get on the table with my spinal cord injury for massage? Oh, they already know how to transfer me. Or once I lay down on the table, I don't have to worry about if my urine bag is going to drain appropriately. They already understand urine bags. They're not freaked out about urine bags. And so for us, that was very critical to make this disability competence really the culture of our organization. So then when they're in the buildings, they have a sliding scale, they have providers that are disability competent, then they have access to all of these services, which is acupuncture, massage, chiropractic, physical therapy, care coordination, behavioral health. We even have primary care. So that's that interdisciplinary approach. And then we have a contracted, and that's with Denver Health that we're contracted with. And then we were contracted with another third party organization for dental support as well. So it's like an individual coming into a facility and truly getting collaborative, interdisciplinary services to really experience improved quality of life, understanding that transportation can be a barrier. So when they come here, they can get multiple services in one day if they so choose to. If they don't have transportation barriers, they can come on a Tuesday, they can come on a Friday. There's a lot that is that's an opportunity for them to really truly get the services that they need, and then that at what level do they get that?
Oh, I love it. And what I think really sings about all, not all sings, but I, when we talk about at the beginning, and, you know, when we come way back to the beginning of your journey and we ask that PCP, that medical doctor, you know, what are my alternatives? What are the other things that I can do? And when you mentioned either they don't know or they don't know how to refer, I mean, that becomes the immediate barrier. Well, yep. You have this whole group of coordinated care, where everyone can kind of speak the same language. So, you know, the PCP who is helping with any kind of pharmaceutical intervention also understands the pain scale and the movement that is shifting through the PT and the massage and the chiropractic. And they can talk and they can look at unintended side effects of medication and how it's showing up in other therapies. That is just brilliant. Everyone should have this, and you have it within a group that is all disability competent. I mean, the barriers that you've just knocked down one after another within your community there is just, it leaves me speechless. I think you so cleanly looked at what are the real problems here.
Mm-hmm. And I think I love that you say that. And I think that to add to that, because I always feel like there's, you know, like those surveys where it's like you get to choose like from 4 to 5 on, I always choose the 4 because I'm like, there's always room for improvement. And so for me, I'm always like, Yes, I appreciate you saying mm-hmm. that. And at the same time, I'm like, oh my goodness, there could be even better organization internally here mm-hmm. amongst our providers. But more so, I'm still identifying the problem to say, like, all of that level of coordination is hoarded inside of the center for disabilities mm-hmm. in Lakewood, Colorado. And so for me, it's like, how do we take that model and replicate it into other places mm-hmm. to say, hey, this is how interdisciplinary collaborative healthcare can work, and not letting these traditional barriers get in the way of how you all as providers can collaborate mm-hmm. better for the end user. And so even though our primary care is aware of it, it still offers, there's more that can be improved there. And it's like, I want a lot more primary care physicians in the community to be aware of it, because it's just, it's so critical. So one of the ways that we're trying to address and approach that is creating a disability competent education platform, so that other physicians, but even other medical providers, can literally go online and pay for modules to learn about disability. And because when you go get your, when you go to medical school, you don't mm-hmm. learn about each individual population in depth. Mm-hmm. And so there are times where, you know, there's been individuals that have either been hospitalized or at a PT or at a neurologist that don't understand disability or the level at the level at which disability is affecting an individual, where, mm-hmm. I mean, had they just known more, they could have far more effectively taken care of that patient. And so I think education is extremely critical. Because if you do look at it, disability is one of the highest disparity populations within mm-hmm. the healthcare system due to lack of education. It's like simply that's what it is. And so mm-hmm. we're trying to figure out, like, with a woman that wants to have a you know, regular pap smear or go see an OBGYN, it's like, well, the mammograms are not accessible. Like, some OBGYNs won't know how to deal with spasticity during, you know, a pap smear. And so it's like, women in wheelchairs have the highest disparity of having those things addressed, because there's not enough providers that know how to work with your body to do that. And so that's a whole nother ballgame that we're like trying to address. It's like, how, you know, again, that's the process, right? Knowing that we're figuring some things out, and as we evolve, we're going to continue to then figure out more things to add into awareness and availability and opportunity.
Yeah. And it has to be an ongoing process. It has to be an ongoing education, because there is truly always more to learn. And that yes. if we, it can't, and I love your 4 out of 5, and I'm the same way, is that it's like, yes, but yes. And, but when it comes down, what I love that you're creating is that you're basing it in education. Because it's about that understanding, and it's about knowing things that are givens, that if you have, you know, an able body, a temporary able body, the things that need to be dealt with through disability have gone so far into your subconscious, don't even think about it, that it does require that level of education about things like spasticity and about things like having a urine bag or having a colostomy bag, that we have to open up to the realities of these other groups. Yeah. And in that way, we can support each other.
Yeah. And some of those aren't even required for providers to know, mm-hmm. but there are some things that are actually by law required for providers to have and to know. And so, mm-hmm. you know, our physician, he's amazing. He's all like, well, you know, where is our OBGYN table in the facility? By law, we are violating the law by not having that in the center. You know, and there's a group of us that there, it's not like we're not providing the table. It's that mm-hmm. we have to create this level of like understanding within the collaboration of the system mm-hmm. to say the table is not even an option. It is a requirement. And so mm-hmm. it's like even that level of education to providers is that it's not just understanding the population more, it's actually knowing what you're required of as a provider mm-hmm. and also saying, hey, you may think that serving people with disabilities is extremely costly. There's actually a way to serve disabilities without spending a dime by improving your processes and your systems.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love it. So are these classes available now? Are they in process?
We're building the platform. It's in process. We were going to actually open up each module as we finished it, but then we decided like, hey, we want to get all of them done and then make all of them available because for us, once mm-hmm. somebody does one module, they're most likely going to be ready to do the next module. And we don't want to say, hey, you've done one, come back later. Like, no, we want them to be able to like, boom, 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 take everyone. And for us, it is mm-hmm. as a center, it is a model of, it's kind of our enterprise area. So it's a way for us to also, anybody that takes that course gets, their CMEs, whatever they need for their continued ed, but then it shoots money back into mm-hmm. our organization for sustainability and additional treatments for those that can't afford it. So when somebody's not only buying the education to educate themselves and improve themselves, they can feel good about, hey, those dollars are going back into somebody getting treatment that can't get it. So that's a pretty cool way to pay for something.
Oh man. And I am just, you have a systems mind. You got the layers upon the layers and the movement, and you must be really good at chess too. I just like, you're moving all of these pieces and growing it bigger. It's incredible. So what comes next? You talked about, you know, so the bill is on the floor now. We're trying to expand from Denver to Colorado as a whole. And then you talk about creating kind of a format for something like your center in other cities. You know, mm-hmm. where are you growing to now? What's in the near future?
So I think that the legislation was one component. I feel as though the education is the other component. And then as far as where this organization, I think that systemically, when we talk about what we're doing here in Colorado, I think that would it be good for us to be advocates for other states around that model? I think those are places that we can go. We're not going tomorrow, but we do have, you know, ideas about where does that live. The unfortunate part is that it's difficult to find advocate groups in those states that understand the integration and what it is that we're doing to say, hey, you as an advocate group, go fight this like we did. It's almost like, hey, we know it so well because we've tried that. It's almost mm-hmm. as if we have to be the champions that actually go and do that. So there's that component. In terms of the center, I think that there's a level of creating sustainability here at the center. I mean, we've only been here since 2017. And so we're really identifying like, how do we have more, having sustainability from more coverage rather than having to raise more dollars to offset those fees, right? So there's that piece where once we can create a really good sustainable model, which is like, we're not saying that it's not sustainable now, but the more sustainable we can get, then we can really identify how does that get replicated and with what partners and where. And then I would say in terms of the last little bucket of education, I think that the education is going to be really critical to roll out and work with a volunteer provider that we can really have them take the modules, tell us what's being missed, and then really start marketing and educating that. And then obviously just adding on to that as we continue it, because as you know, in all three of these buckets, it's really us staying aware of the current processes and growing with the processes. So I think those are kind of what's in our future as an organization. And I'm excited about those things. And I'm really proud of all the people, our donors, our staff, our providers, community partners that are really involved in the mission, the sustainability, and the growth. And somebody's like, well, you're talking about sustainability and growth. And I was like, yeah, isn't there such thing as sustainable growth? And like those two words together, I think is an oxymoron, but at the same time, I'm all like, I like them together. So we'll see.
When it comes to the health and well-being of everyone, everybody, we mm-hmm. have to have a sustainable growth. We have to see this system sustain the positive changes that it's making, because there are a lot. We have, you know, people like you and people in the alternative medicine world that are passionately pursuing how could this system serve the health and vitality of everybody better. Yeah. So we've got to sustain it and we've got to keep growing. Mm-hmm. There's no other way.
Yeah. Sustainable growth.
Let's do it. So for anybody that feels inspired by your mission or wants to learn more, how can they get in touch? How can they access your care, volunteer? Give us the links.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to give you the new website link. So it's chandacenter.org. That's where the center information is. And then we have the chandaplan.org. And so anyone can go to those. The Chanda Center, as mentioned before, .org is where individuals can access our services. There's volunteers that can access coming into the center and supporting us with administrative paperwork and such things. As for the foundation, obviously, we're always looking for people to support our fundraisers. We're looking for people to sit on our board of directors that really have expertise in certain areas that really want to get involved in all the work that we're doing, even if they're local or national. I think that we've always wanted to have a national board and expertise from other areas. So those are the two. We always have two of everything, right? It's like, I encourage people to check out those. Obviously, we're all over social media as well. So, you can follow us with updates on every social media platform that you can think of. So, I don't know all the handles, but I can guarantee that if you go to any of those and search in Chanda Center or Chanda Plan, you will absolutely find it.
And we'll link all the handles down in the show notes as well. We have the foundation, we have the center, we have all of these arenas because you are a systems maven. You just have done so much already. Thank you so much for sharing your story, your inspiration, and your plans for the future. I hope we all can keep dreaming big when it comes to looking at vitality and health and where we can all go.
And thank you so much for having me. I really, truly appreciate the opportunity to share my thoughts. And I think that what you're doing in the podcast and having all of these amazing people talk about the things that need to be talked about is super critical. So thank you for what you do as well.
Thank you. Thank you. It is my love. and thank you everyone for joining us as being part of this movement. We'll catch you next week with another episode of the Healing Ground Movement. Be well.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. I hope you enjoyed what you heard and got a little something out of it. Now remember, the information expressed in these interviews is for informational and not diagnostic or treatment purposes. However, I hope you find that having the right information and resources can go a long way to helping you on your healthcare journey. Ask the right questions and seek out professional help.